The broadcast is now starting. All attendees are in listen-only mode.
A very warm welcome to everyone on the line to this live session at Best Ideas 2021. It's a great pleasure to welcome back to this forum David Barr, a very well-known investor in the MOI Global community, somebody I respect tremendously and have learned so much from over the years. Dave is president and CEO of Pender Fund Capital Management. He's also the portfolio manager of the award-winning Pender Value Fund and Pender Small Cap Opportunities Fund. Dave began his investing career in 2000, initially working in private equity. He joined Pender in 2003, was appointed chief investment officer in 2007, before becoming president and CEO of Pender in 2016. Dave holds an MBA from the Schulich School of Business and earned his Chartered Financial Analyst designation in 2003. He looks for value in unpopular places to find high-quality businesses at a price that includes a margin of safety. Investing in a company trading below intrinsic value decreases the risk and increases the potential for generating significant long-term outperformance. Joining Dave today for this session is Amar Pandia, Senior Investment Analyst and Associate Portfolio Manager. Amar joined Pender in 2017. He started his investment career in 2011 in the portfolio management training program at a large global financial services company. Amar advocates contrarian value investing strategy, identifying out of favor quality compound growth businesses, as well as opportunistic close the discount investment opportunities, trading in a significant discount to intrinsic value. He has a Bachelor of Commerce degree in finance with honors from the University of Manitoba and earned his CFA designation in 2015. We are very lucky to have both of you here with us today, Dave and Amar, and I know each of you will present an idea. Very much looking forward to this, so let's get started. Dave, I will turn it to you.
Thank you, John, and thank you, everybody, for listening in today. Hopefully, we provide some ideas, which may provide some insight and some opportunities for some profits. It's interesting, I was chuckling when you mentioned starting my career in 2000. I think we've now gone full cycle in the tech sector. When I started, everybody was very excited about technology for about 5 minutes. Today, people are excited about technology again. So it's always interesting how these things come and go. Amar and I, we were both very focused on Canadian small cap opportunities. And if anyone's been reading my commentaries, it's been a broken record for about 3 years. And, this is acute in Canada, but I know this is other places around the globe where, small cap has really lagged large cap quite significantly over the past few years. And obviously the value style has been out of favor. So it's been a challenging environment. We think the tides have turned a little bit, which I think it's probably a very timely time to be looking at small cap and Canadian small caps. In particular, today I'm going to present on a company called Pronto Forms. I would like to apologize to this crowd. I was going to present on Pronto Forms last year. However, I tried to go further up in market cap size to hit the minimum cutoff. Good news is Pronto Forms now hits the minimum cutoff, so we're going to talk about it today. But based on the price appreciation, I apologize for not presenting last year. So what does Pronto Forms do? Just snapshot. They provide software solutions to transform paper forms to mobile forms for field workers. So people out there in the field collecting data just allows them to very easily do it on their mobile device and transmit that data back to the head office. When I told John I was going to present on this, the share price was, if you look at the chart here, a little while ago, a little bit lower than it is today. Price has been around $1.40 the last couple of days. Enterprise value of the firm is $175 million. Those are in Canadian dollars. The company reports in U.S. dollars, and they're doing $17 million of revenue U.S. on a trailing 12-month basis. And on a Canadian dollar basis, it's about 6.6 times EV to revenue. Company today has 2,700 customers with over 100,000 subscribers, so multiple users within each customer. And I'll go into a bit more detail on this, but currently 22 customers are over 100,000 of ARR. So very, very diverse customer base and very sticky customer base. Our investment thesis on Pronto Forms, we've seen very robust organic growth. We believe there's a high probability of that organic growth continuing into the future. Very predictable high margin on the recurring revenue. So 90% gross margins and 90% of the revenue is recurring. They've seen strong revenue expansion to date from an increasing enterprise customer base. They've really been a beneficiary of an acceleration of digital transformation, in particular this year. And we still believe they're in the early stages of a very large untapped market. So there's a long runway here. When we're looking at small cap companies, we love founder-led companies with significant insider ownership and a strong board. And we tick all the boxes here. And bottom line is we think Pronto Forms is an emerging compounder. This is a stock we love to own. Someone may come along and take it out. If we do, it's, as Charlie Munger says, the hardest thing is you never want to interrupt the compounding process. Sometimes it gets interrupted through no decision of your own. Business overview. So Pronto Forms is focused on field service automation platform. So they have a low-code platform that allows companies to build apps and design forms for field operations. And if you look at the bottom here, some of their customers, Johnson Controls, Sodexo, CBRE, AAA, here it is, you have people out there in the field. And what it allows the head office or the company, the business analyst to design and build forms on their low code platform. So you don't need to hire a big dev team to do it, which just captures the data in real time and brings it back to head office. And you're able to customize these workflows in the documents. So you're getting the right data and the right format. And it ties into back-end systems. And then it allows the company to track trends, get real-time insights, and at the bottom end of the day, make better business decisions. There are four key verticals, medical equipment, heavy equipment manufacturers, utilities, and natural resources. So very focused on, it's a business-to-business software company. We've got a couple customer quotes here, just really demonstrating to me this is a great product solving real problems for customers. Here's a quote from AAA. Pronto Forms has saved drivers 3 minutes per service call or 750 hours every month. That's a pretty tangible payback for any company adopting a low-code platform like this. Another review from Encana. This amazing product enables us to collect various field data, feed it into our corporate EH&S and asset management system, saving a lot of time and effort. The forms are easy to build, intuitive to use. It's really well thought out and designed product. So there's a couple of just great customer references demonstrating the capabilities of the Pronto Forms platform. And I mentioned the CEO, Alvaro Palumbo, is founder of the company, still owns a big chunk of it. And he spent his life in field services and really he understands the need for collecting this data in the field. And I find when you have vertical software companies like this, solving real world problems, it usually comes from someone who understands that problem and really relates to customers. And provides a ton of benefit as the company grows because Alvaro is able to talk to customers, understand what they're doing, and it really helps in terms of product iteration, designing new features and functionality into the product, as well as selling the product to customers in at the end of the day. Look at the key competitive advantages for Pronto Forms. Number one is ease of use. It's low code. You can build it easily. You can You can change it around, move it around pretty, very adaptable. You can deploy it really quickly in the field. The technology integrates seamlessly with any company's existing technology stack. This is really the product is a great fit for high risk, high value, and more complex workflows. And which is really interesting given how it's a low code. So it's low cost, low code, easy to do, but really focused on high value functionality. The product itself has very rich enterprise features. So, there's very large data sources in the drop-down menu. It supports multi-step workflows and conditional routing. And it facilitates teamwork so that people can actually be working on the same form simultaneously, which is definitely high demand from field service users and challenging to do on the back end technological side. And we really view the Pronto Forms as the leader in mobile form automation. They got the highest customer rated low code mobile app development solution according to Gartner Peer Insights. So whenever you're ranking that high with Gartner, you're generally in a pretty good space. I talked about the organic growth of Pronto Forms. Here's the revenue growth from 2013, 3 million to 14 million for year end December 2019. That's 28% annualized, which is a fantastic growth rate. I think 2020 was a little bit slower. Obviously, there was some disruption as a result of COVID. And there is a little bit of when you look at these numbers, what doesn't take into account is earlier on they had a high percentage of their revenues through a channel partner, and a couple like 2016 they really transitioned to moving to a direct sales model. So as they took resources away from their channel partner, growth slowed down there. And they really started ramping up on the direct side. So when you start at zero, you got a million on the direct side, your growth rate slows down a little bit when you back off on the channel side. But what we've seen is really strong growth on their direct sales. And it's really, it's always better to have a direct relationship with your customer than a channel partner, because you don't actually know the use cases or are people actually using your product necessarily. Having that direct relationship and building out that side of their business, and now it's the majority of their revenue, and we're going to start to see I potentially an inflection in the recurring revenue growth rate as a result of that and the emergence from COVID over the coming quarters. The revenue is very predictable. Here's a chart showing recurring revenue as well as professional services. And then gross margin of the recurring revenue. So it's been pretty steady at about 90% gross margins of recurring revenue, which we would expect of a product of this nature, but really speaks to how scalable this market opportunity given the scalability of the underlying product is. We're always looking. Organic growth is always, when you can reinvest your own cash flows and grow your top line, it's a wonderful way of creating shareholder value over the long term. And we see a lot of opportunity here for Pronto Forms to expand within their existing enterprise customer accounts, as well as adding more enterprise customers. Right now, they have 22 customers with over 100,000 of ARR, represents about 39% of their customer base. These enterprise customers tend to be stickier relationships. There tends to be more revenue expansion opportunities. A lot of companies will talk about land and expand. This is definitely the case. As the great vertical software companies out there, when you're meeting a very determined customer need, you're got constant feedback going with your customers to build out your product roadmap. So you can build out additional use cases really quickly and expand within the organization. You can expand across geographies. as well as, you know, so you can expand both use cases, but also across other divisions and departments of companies. So the company's had a big, Prontos had a very big focus on landing enterprise customers so that they can continue to grow within those customer bases. They've been building a direct sales team, as I mentioned earlier. And we've also, on the tailwind side, we've seen an increasing demand for field automation. And COVID is accelerating this digital transformation. It's when you have people out there and the field workers out there, you want them to be safe. You want everyone to be secure. And, you know, utilizing additional technology improves the safety of the field worker, as well as the security of the data and the process. Unit economics for Pronto Forms. For each subscriber, a long-term value is about $1,500. Customer acquisition costs are about $320. So when you look at it on a payback basis, it's about 16 months. That doesn't quite relate. It's, you have to, a bit of the understanding here is the long-term value takes into account the expansion opportunities once customers actually adopt the product. Over 60% of the customers are under contracts that are greater than a year. Majority of customers pay 1 year in advance. So it provides a cash flow annuity, which actually allows them to invest a little bit ahead of the curve to support their growth. So it's a wonderful internal funding mechanism to fuel the growth of the business. I mentioned the land and expand opportunities. Here we have a breakdown of small, medium business, which is, companies with less than 100 employees versus commercial versus enterprise. As you can see, the enterprise business has ramped up quite significantly here since 2016, since they started pursuing this opportunity aggressively. And what's really interesting is that the net retention on trailing 12 months was 112% for enterprise customers versus 106% for all customers. So, what's great is you look at this business and with 106% redemption across all, or net retention across all customers, you've got your 6% growth already factored in essentially. And then any new customers on top of that add to your growth rate. So it's a very, very powerful revenue model. As I mentioned, they've been expanding their direct sales force. You talk to Alvaro, and when they onboard salespeople, and he does all the right things, waits for them to become productive based on internal metrics. When they do, they hire somebody else. And as a result, we've seen direct sales, we've seen higher sales growth compared to the third-party operator channels. We have directly motivated internal salespeople. If your product has legs, you'll generally see, stronger adoption. With a direct sales force, you have better visibility and control of the customer relationship. You also get more customer feedback, which helps with your product roadmap and being able to move across divisions and geographies. And as a result, they've been driving a higher long-term value per customer and decreasing churn. So anytime you get closer to your customer, you should be able to capture more value and decrease your churn. Talking about the tailwinds, the increasing demand for field automation. So what drives digital transformation in the field? Well, with everything we do, field service workflows are getting more complicated. What's very interesting though is this is supported by all stakeholders within organizations. So if you're a field worker, this improves your efficiency, you're happy. If you're the VP operations, the data and the field workers are easy to track. It's easy to track the progress and the work quality of what's going on in the field. The C-level execs they like this because it allows them to take preventative action to improve profitability. And the finance department loves it because of the quick payback. We've heard a couple of the customer testimonials. And, really what drives it is it's increasing the safety and compliance requirements for these companies. And with changing demographics in the world today, people are more comfortable using technology. So it's just creating more demand right across the important. People are much, much more comfortable using technology every single year. Obviously we saw, COVID hit last year, and it's been, there's a bit of a lot of talk about it, how it's accelerating digital transformation. But you can just imagine where you've got, field services, companies that, all of a sudden all their offices are empty, and, you need to find new ways to, communicate within the business, new ways of automating workflow, and, low-code apps are actually, pretty interesting way of doing this. And Pronto Forms was featured in the Wall Street Journal article this year on how low-code apps help companies to cope with this new norm. So if anyone wants to read that article, you can find that off. When we're looking for what we, compounders, very popular word out there in the Twitter sphere nowadays, are really looking for companies that are addressing large untapped markets. And this is certainly the case. Here Pronto Forms is one of the market leaders. They have 100,000 subscribers. Our research indicates there's about 42 million North American wide. So pretty large opportunity in North America alone. And then also when you look at the growing low code app market, Forrester is projecting low code market to reach 6.7 billion in 2020, up 8% year over year, and expects to grow an additional 15% in 2021. So low code and field service automation is a massive market opportunity, and Pronto Forms is just getting started. Valuation today, still trading at a discount to what we view as intrinsic value and relative to peers. What's wonderful, company historically growing at almost 30% is able to compound that intrinsic value. So over the long term, we think this could be a very compelling opportunity. Right now, trades a little under 7x revenue. Large cap SaaS companies obviously trading at 10x plus. On a private market valuation perspective, that one of their main competitors, GoCanvas, was acquired by private equity 2 years ago at 5 to 8x revenue. It was a similar size to Pronto Forms at that time, but they had way more on the small to medium business customer side, given higher quality customer base, more advanced company today. We think Pronto Forms gets a higher multiple in the private market than what's indicated by the previous transactions. And one of the things we always look for in the small cap space, when it's a $100 million company, when you start to own significant portions of companies of this size, you can't always, stock price goes way up, you can't always sell. So you always have to have multiple outs. So always try to figure out, how attractive is this to a third party. Anytime you have a SaaS, there's no shortage of buff buyers for SaaS companies right now. Most importantly, it's at a base business level, if you're running a very attractive business with strong organic growth, a long runway, excellent unit economics, and you're out competing your competitors, somebody's probably going to want to buy you. So that's kind of at the individual business level, how we look at the M&A landscape. The second aspect is what does the industry look like? And we've started seeing consolidation in the low code app space. So I think there are no shortage of consolidating buyers here. The other thing you have to look at is, with a company, their market cap's 175 million, but that makes it very palatable and easy to digest for a lot of potential buyers. So smaller companies just naturally get acquired more often because there's more potential buyers who can swallow it, but also at this size, it will make a difference. And company's got a very clean capital structure, tightly held by insiders, board members, and institutional holders. Very clean. So why does the opportunity exist? As I mentioned, it's an underfollowed Canadian microcap. Canadian small microcap has been really out of favor for almost a decade now, but in particular, the last 3 years has been really tough. There's one sell side analyst that covers this. Small market cap, small float. It's based in Ottawa, so it's not in Toronto where the majority of fund managers are. So just a lot less coverage. I mentioned the lack of liquidity with insider ownership over 50%. So a lot of, you know, the larger Canadian small cap managers won't even look at this because they just can't get a position. And, you know, as typical with a lot of these SaaS companies, they're losing money on paper. You know, it is cash flow break even intentionally, and it is self-sustaining. So, you know, the right thing for this company to do is every time they generate a dollar of free cash flow is reinvest that dollar in growth, given the incremental free cash flow margins of the business, and its ability to actually grow by utilizing that dollar. We always run our risk assessment of portfolio companies. So we call it the Trinity of Risk, and it's business risk, balance sheet risk, and valuation risk. And, you know, given, you know, high predictable recurring revenue and expanding enterprise customer base, high revenue retention, low churn, you know, we view business risk quite low here. Balance sheet risk, strong net cash. This is an intentionally cash flow break-even company. It can be highly profitable anytime they wanted to, but obviously it's not the right thing to do. So balance sheet risk is low, and valuation risk is low as well. It trades at a discount to private market value, as well as publicly traded comps. So why we like the opportunity, it's just a track record of impressive organic growth. It's an inflection point. We think they're, you know, on the verge of starting to show operating leverage, which a lot of investors will look for. You know, even though they're operating break even, people like to see a little bit of profit before they'll wade in and give the company the benefit of the doubt. It's a founder-led company with high inside ownership. We think it could be a potential acquisition target. But, you know, the thing that really excites us is we think it's, you know, early innings of a big target market. They've historically grown at almost 30%. You know, given if they can grow close to that over the next decade, we will definitely have been very happy to own this business. But there is the potential of a catalyst happening in the meantime. So with that, thanks for listening on Pronto Forms. And I'll now turn it over to my colleague, Amar Pandya, who's going to talk about not a tech company, but a great Canadian microcap.
All right, great. Thank you, Dave, and thank you, John. Very excited to be participating in the Best Ideas Conference this year. So the company I'll be discussing is MAV Beauty Brands. Just a snapshot on the company. MAV is a Canadian-based global personal care products company with a platform focused on acquiring independent founder-led brands and helping them scale and expand market share. The company trades on the TSX with a market cap of just over 200 million and insider ownership of nearly 58%. So our investment thesis for the company, MAV is among the fastest growing hair care product companies in North America, outpacing industry growth and outgrowing many of its larger CPG peers by multiple times. The personal care products industry is massive, recession resistant, and MAV has a long runway for growth. The company has a strong innovation focus, developing new on-trend products quickly, offering a win-win value proposition, bringing traffic with higher velocity of sales to retailers, while also providing consumers with quality products they want. The company has established itself with a platform model, making it the acquirer of choice for independent brands that are looking to scale. MAV has a great operating model. It's capital light, high margins, strong cash conversion, and the company generates robust free cash flow. There's good alignment with insiders who own 58% of the company and are incentivized to unlock value in the shares. We believe it's a compelling special situation with a dislocated valuation, and we believe there's high probability that the multiple will materially re-rate or the company is likely to be acquired. So a little background on the company. MAV was founded by Mark Anthony Vanier, a third generation hairstylist with his grandfather and both parents having owned and operated a hair salon in Canada. He developed a passion for hairstyling at a young age, went on to attend a top Toronto Hair Academy, and spent a few years training with the top European hairstylists, eventually becoming an award-winning celebrity stylist. He took the experience and the passion to create the Mark Anthony line of premium hair care products and body care products, launched in 1995. The company pioneered the masstige product category, So this is a premium product with higher quality ingredients, which typically retails in North America for about $4 to $12. A premium to mass market products from the large CPGs, which typically retails for about under $5, but while still accessible and convenient to consumers relative to salon care products, which retail starting at a mid-teen price point and can go up materially from there. The business was acquired by TA Associates in 2006, a leading private equity firm with a strong background in growing brand-driven consumer and retail companies, with a track record of working with founders and management teams to help build dozens of world-recognized consumer brands. Alongside the help of TA, the company established a platform model whereby the company would acquire independent, founder-led personal care product brands, help those brands grow and scale, following a model that's very similar to the US-based Clorox Company, a leading global CPG company which owns several well-known household and consumer product brands, having acquired them over the past few decades. The company went public in the summer of 2018, and as is typical with many IPOs, it went public at a very high valuation, anchored to high expectations. When the company consistently failed to meet those expectations, the stock price fell, with a large turnover in the shareholder base. On the personal care industry, it's a massive global industry approaching almost $500 billion in sales. Historically, it's proven to be recession-proof with annualized growth of 3.7% in the past 15 years. The industry also had positive growth through the financial crisis, as well as during the COVID-19 pandemic. People are hopefully, at least, always going to shower, and MAB's positioning in the masstige price point can take advantage of consumers trading down from more expensive salon products. That was the case in 2020 with many salons and barbershops closed during the lockdowns. Consumers who would typically buy a product from a salon bought a masstige product, and as they see the quality and superior value proposition, we think that's likely to lead to some stickiness for MAB. MAB is currently in the hair and body care segments, where there's considerable opportunity in white space for new products, and there's also longer-term potential to expand into adjacent product categories. The company has a diverse, complementary portfolio of brands that are exposed to high-growth categories and provide diversification in terms of sales, hair care segments, and consumer demographic base. Their original brand, named after the founder, Mark Anthony, provides a modern salon-inspired product. They acquired a brand called Cake in 2018, which makes a fun, vibrant, sensorial-rich product. Gross sales in that business have increased by 7 times since MAB acquired them, and the founder of Cake is still creative director of the brand. They acquired a brand called Renpure also in 2018, which makes a plant-based, naturally-inspired product. Sales there have grown at a 30% compound annual growth rate since acquired. And then in late 2019, they acquired The Mane Choice, a disruptive brand in the textured hair care product market segment with a loyal, passionate consumer base and a broad complementary distribution platform. So adding new consumers and retailers to MAB, providing for cross-selling opportunities. So the company has a compelling growth model. The business is asset light. They outsource the procurement, manufacturing, and distribution of their products. They don't hold any inventory on the balance sheet. MAB has low CapEx intensity at less than 1% of sales. And all of this leads to high cash conversion and high free cash flow generation. This asset-light, low-complex model also allows the company to be highly flexible, which we think is a relative advantage versus their larger CPG competitors. During the pandemic, for example, they benefited from having all their manufacturing in North America, while many of their competitors sourced from China, which led to supply chain issues. They can easily pivot to new suppliers, switch raw ingredients as they reformulate a product, add distribution as they add a new retailer partner, and they can take advantage of new trends by developing and launching a new product in a matter of only months, as opposed to the multi-year process it takes a global CPG company to formulate, brand, and then distribute a new product. From a retailer perspective, having an on-trend product can drive traffic, provide higher velocity of sales, and diversify away from the dominant global CPG brands who use their brand power and market share to leverage better pricing from retailers. So all these factors have driven above average category growth for MAV and its brands. The other part of their platform model is where they can acquire other independent brands and provide the resources to grow and scale the businesses, providing this new brand with all of the advantage that MAV has over the larger CPG competitors. In terms of the products the company has, they really target being on trend, and that's enabled the company to deliver above average category growth. There's a broad trend in the consumer products industry of premiumization. So consumers want higher quality products that are convenient, and that's exactly what the Mastige product category where MAV is focused offers, with consumers trading up from their lower price point mass market brands to a MAV product. There's a growing trend of supporting authentic independent brands, which MAV is also well positioned to benefit from. There's also increasing demand for natural and organic plant-based products, which is what the Renpure brand that MAV acquired in 2018 is focused on. And finally, their targeted demographic is 25 to 40-year-old millennials who spend a disproportionately high amount on beauty and personal care products versus other generations. So across the board, the company is on trend with key growth categories, which should support above average growth. In terms of the company's organic growth strategy, it's really focused on building strong standalone brands on their platform. As they acquire a new brand, they can sell their products and expand relationships with new retail partners, adding more retailers, getting onto more shelves, and adding more SKUs. Their strong innovation focus also allows them to act early on emerging market trends, react quickly to retailer feedback. An example of this is one of their key Canadian retailer partners asked them to develop a new product, which they were seeing high demand for, but couldn't source. And MAV was able to develop and bring that product to market in a matter of a few months. The company has also expanded into new categories, having only sold hair care products prior to 2018, but moving into body care in 2018 and skincare in 2019. A focus for them is amplifying their brand through a dedicated brand management team and then utilizing multiple channels from traditional media to social media and online advertising to market their products. The company is using social media influencers and micro-influencers to promote and expand the presence of the brand. Without any efforts by the company, they actually had a product called Strictly Curls go viral on TikTok in 2019. So teens started using the product to make their hair wavy and share videos of it on the app. And this garnered tens of millions of views, which resulted in a 60% increase in sales for that specific product. So this viral marketing is something the company is studying and hoping to replicate in the future. The benefit of the platform model is also the scale and synergy it provides to drive efficiency. So they can renegotiate manufacturing contracts, redesign formulas, rebalance their supply chain to optimize for scale. And as of Q3 of 2020, the company saw a 200 basis point improvement in gross margins on a year-over-year basis, up to 51% by driving these efficiency gains. The company also benefits from being an acquirer of choice for fast-growing independent hair care brands. So MAV offers founders of independent brands access to capital or a way to monetize part of their business. They provide strategic capabilities, marketing, product innovation support, access to their manufacturing and distribution platform to scale the business, cross-selling opportunities with their over 100 retailer partners. And MAV has an entrepreneurial and innovative culture, which makes them a steward of authentic independent brands. The company also offers founders the opportunity to lead and grow their brands within the MAV platform. So for many founders, selling their business to MAV is more favorable than to private equity or a larger CPG company. In terms of the criteria MAV has for the targets, they're looking for brands that are on trend and in demand in a category with lots of runway and white space, adding strategic capabilities to the platform, new retail relationships, or a complementary customer demographic base. They also focus on targets which have a similar asset light and high margin model, and for deals to be earnings accretive immediately. In terms of their distribution, they have a strong North American platform with products in over 100 retailers across more than 60,000 doors focused on the food, drug, and mass retail channel. So this proved to be highly beneficial in 2020 as their products were sold in essential businesses, So with many regions going into lockdowns and salons and mall-based beauty product retailers closed, MAV saw strong demand for their products in grocery stores and drugstores. The company was also quick to take advantage of e-commerce demand, which doubled in 2020. Their products are sold on Amazon, their various retail partners' online websites, and they also saw strong growth in their own D2C channel. Up until the last few years, hair care products had little to no online sales, but the company has been able to take advantage of this demand and increase their e-commerce penetration to the double digits. In terms of future growth opportunities, there's lots of high growth product categories where the company can expand into. They're developing new products within their existing brands, adding more product SKUs of current brands, and expanding their retail partner relationships as well. So there's the potential to acquire a complementary brand into the platform and cross-sell those products. And finally, expanding distribution to new retail partners. So using US Nielsen data, the company believes that despite being the eighth largest hair care brand in the US, they only have 1/4 of the distribution points of the average top 10 hair care brand. So there's still a significant runway to expanding retail partner relationships. So the graphic below shows the retail distribution model. It's getting into as many doors with as many products, driving points of distribution, offering compelling quality and on-trend products to drive velocity of sales, and then grow the business by expanding into new categories and acquiring new brands. So here's a graph that shows MAV's revenue and EBITDA growth on a trailing three-year basis versus a number of key competitors in the beauty, personal care, and hair care industry. The larger multinational CPGs have diverse businesses, but it's clear that MAV has demonstrated considerable top and bottom line growth, far outpacing the industry average, with strong margins and a double-digit growth in both its top and bottom line. So we believe MAV is a high quality business with a compelling model, unique deal flow and acquisitions, and strong fundamentals. So where's the opportunity? Well, it has to do with the valuation and the market dynamics surrounding the stock. The company went public in the summer of 2018 at what we thought at the time was a very rich valuation, which was also anchored to achieving very aggressive growth targets. The company struggled to meet those targets, struggled with some minor execution issues, failed to communicate guidance targets effectively with investors, and with the small float, low liquidity, the shares fell to a trough of about 87% below the IPO price after five consecutive quarterly misses. This was late 2019, and during that time, there was also significant turnover in the shareholder base. This was a culmination of frustration with management, tax loss selling, and what we suspect was also non-fundamental selling. Many of the top shareholders at the IPO were large growth funds with mandates requiring them to invest in mid-cap or larger companies, while MAV's market cap had fallen to a Canadian small cap size. It was also a hot IPO, so allocations were small. Many funds had immaterial portfolio weights even at the time of the IPO, which after the decline in the share price became even less material. At the time of the IPO, there was a view that more stock would become available as TA associates sold out their position, or as the company raised equity to finance future acquisitions. But with the multiple collapsing, new shares were not sold or sold by TA. So while many investors were selling, we saw the founder and CEO of the business materially increase his stake in the company to 25%, while TA associates also maintained their 30% plus interest in the company. The founder stepped back from the CEO role in 2020, a new operationally focused CEO with experience in the personal care products industry joined MAV. A new CFO also joined the company with a focus on growing free cash flow, cutting costs, driving efficiency gains, and improving working capital. So we thought this was an interesting setup, and we've come to appreciate viewing a busted IPO similar to a spinoff. There's a new dedicated management team, their passion about running the business. A new incentive package is provided to align management with shareholders. There's turnover in the shareholder base, and expectations are reset. And we believe that including insiders, over 90% of shareholders now have an average cost base under $5, so no longer anchored to the $14 IPO price. And what we've seen in the past year with this new management team has been strong execution, consistent growth, and compelling fundamentals, which have only recently seen any reflection in the market. So just to highlight those strong fundamentals again, with revenue, gross profits, and EBITDA growing at an annualized mid-teen rate, and with EPS doubling, looking at these results independently or relative to industry peers, while also looking at the share price, would cause you to scratch your head. But it showed the impact that anchoring to those expectations, being out of favor, and lacking liquidity had on the dislocation of the valuation. To illustrate the dislocated valuation further, you can see that despite MAV outgrowing peers and the industry, the company trades at a fraction of peer levels. So these are obviously much larger, geographically diverse, and liquid businesses, but also mature and lacking the product growth, retail distribution expansion, and the acquisition tailwinds, which we believe MAV has. And then on the M&A environment. So the M&A environment in the beauty sector has been highly active with several precedent transactions in the last few years. Many of these transactions have been private without takeout multiples reported, but we do see from public transactions that the average takeout multiple is 15 times trailing EBITDA, a 50% premium to NAV's multiple. So we think there's considerable margin expansion opportunity and multiple expansion opportunity for NAV. So why do we like the opportunity? It's leading the industry in growth in a historically defensive business. We think the platform model is low capex intensity, generating high free cash flow with high margins. There's very high insider ownership and alignment of incentives. M&A upside, both as an acquirer as well as a potential acquisition target. And we think that the valuation is materially dislocated, which presents the opportunity of either that valuation discount narrowing or the company being acquired. So in terms of the trendy risk we use to evaluate stocks, we see the business risk as being low. It's historically a recession-resistant business. They have a very large and growing distribution network now and limited customer concentration. In terms of the balance sheet, we see a medium risk there. So they do carry a bit of leverage, about in excess of 3.5 times. But we consider that manageable given the low capex intensity of the business and the high free cash flow and free cash flow conversion that it generates. And in terms of the valuation risk, we also see it as low, trading at a discount to what we believe is intrinsic value, as well as a deep discount relative to peers. And with that, I'll open up to you, John, for questions.
Terrific. Well, thanks, Dave and Amar, for outlining those theses in such great detail. Just a reminder to everyone on the line, if you do have a question, feel free to type it into the online interface. Perhaps we could start with capital allocation. If each of you could just talk a little bit about how you see that going forward and if there's anything you might prioritize differently than the management.
Yeah, on the Prontoform side, I posted Alvaro on a online panel recently, and I asked him this question, and it's consistent with kind of our what we would expect the company to do. You know, when we asked him, you know, what the M&A pipeline looked like, he's like, well, you know, our cost for acquisition costs are to a point where, and it doesn't really make sense for us to actually go out and acquire. So what I love about hearing that is it's a very disciplined M&A process. He understands, you know, you need to get more than you pay for. And so he's making a very appropriate trade-off of choosing to allocate capital for organic growth as opposed to M&A. And given the context of that market, you know, still early stages, lots of greenfield, you know, you don't have to go looking for M&A in order to hit pretty aggressive growth targets. So, you know, it's very much an organic growth story at this point in time. Which we think is absolutely the right decision by Alvaro. Amar?
So in terms of MAV's capital allocation strategy, 2020, obviously given the uncertainty with the pandemic, their focus has been on paying down debt, and that's the priority for free cash flow. But looking forward to 2021, now that they have better visibility on their business, but also on the industry, it seems like they're going to pivot much more towards being selective, but focusing on M&A. A lot of smaller independent brands that sell a single product or have limited retail distribution, they've, you know, experienced some severe frustrations during the pandemic. They might be looking for an exit or a larger, being part of a larger platform that has broader distribution and can handle the back office. So they see a pretty significant pipeline for acquisitions, and the way they can structure deals with earnouts and with equity, they don't have to take on any additional or very little additional leverage to get the deals closed.
Great, thank you. That's very helpful. You've talked about management already, but could you just elaborate a little bit on their incentives, please?
Yeah, on the platform side, I think Alvaro owns 3.5% of the company. So, you know, majority of his net worth, so a very substantial position. Compensation levels are modest. So, you know, like in terms of being shareholder friendly, it ticks our box in terms of good governance.
So for Mav, you have a new management team in place now. So they've been given a new incentive compensation package. But the other factor that we think is interesting for this company, and that's a core part of our thesis, is also the insider ownership. So that's partly held by the CEO, who owns about 26%. In his case, we believe that this is the majority of his net worth. So he's certainly looking to make sure he manages that, but also potentially grow and eventually monetize it in the future. And then TA Associates, the private equity firm that took the company public, own roughly 31% as well. This is the last holding in the vintage from that fund. So they're also looking to monetize it, but also in a shortened order as well. So we think there's good alignment both with management and the key insiders who own the majority of the stock in the company.
When it comes to the risks to the long-term thesis here, I was hoping each of you could address one risk that you see as particularly pertinent over, you know, the next 5 to 10 years in terms of affecting the quality of each business.
Yeah, for Pronto, I mean, it would be classic tech risk factor where, particularly in this environment where there are private equity groups and large companies chasing different market opportunities, and there's certainly a lot of capital which is interested in this space right now. I mean, that's a bit of a double-edged sword because it provides a lot of buyers who will potentially buy your company, but it also provides a much heightened level of competition. So you can have some very sophisticated operators with lots of money behind them to erode into your existing competitive advantages and ultimately hurt your business over the long term.
For Mav, over that time period, you know, what we're seeing that, you know, we see as a risk longer term potentially is a lot to do with the ESG movement and, you know, the green movement. We're seeing in Europe, there are some retailers that are doing refills now. So you bring in your own or a used shampoo bottle, you refill it there. That would obviously be negative for the company. And then the D2C channel as well, just as new innovators and influencers launch their own products and brands, they no longer have to go be part of a platform. There's the opportunity for them to remain independent and try to build a business that way. So those are two risks that potentially we see longer term.
And perhaps lastly, if each of you could just talk about the key data points you are tracking to either validate or challenge your thesis here.
For me, it has been revenue growth from their direct sales channel. So watching that compound at a much higher rate than the actual top line revenue growth, because they've been transitioning from selling through a channel partner to selling directly. So just watching that level of top line growth.
In the case of Mav, it's also top-line growth, but in their case, it's having above-average organic growth. If they're growing above the industry and at a faster pace, and their valuation is at a fraction of the peer multiples, that just doesn't seem sustainable. So, you know, our thesis is about that valuation discount narrowing, and that's the key factor that we're focusing on.
Amr, we're a couple of value investors, and we're talking about growth. What a world we live in.
New day.
Growth is a component of value.
Well said, John.
And by the way, Dave, I just want to make this officially clear that no further market cap minimums will apply to you guys. So please don't hold back on the sub-$100 million opportunities in the future.
Sorry, John, we're Canadians. We're big rule followers.
Well, it's officially waived, so there you go.
Great, thank you.
Well, thanks to Dave and Amr. Truly appreciate you taking the time to be with us again and share these two investment cases with the MY Global community. It's a big value add for us, and we're grateful to you. So thanks.
Thank you, John. I just would like to extend the invite to those of you in the MY Global community. Feel free to reach out to us. We love the very thoughtful community John's developed, and we love talking about our ideas, so feel free to reach out anytime.
Terrific. Thank you. And thanks, everybody, for listening. If you would like an introduction to Dave or Amr, feel free to contact me, and I'd be happy to provide that. Take care for now. Goodbye.
Thank you, John.